Hello, everybody. With Bob Christopher, I'm Bob Davis, welcoming you to Basic Gospel, a media ministry dedicated to helping you hear, believe, and live the good news of Jesus Christ. This is a special edition of the broadcast, so the phone lines will not be open. And Bob Christopher, on a previous program, we had a very wonderful guest with us, Abraham Hillel, who is the tour guide for our upcoming trip to Israel. We got excited about the prospect of having Abraham with us, and I don't think we finished the conversation the last time. What do you think?
I don't think we finished, and I think we could probably do 10 more of these broadcasts.
I think you're right.
Still not finish our conversation with Abraham. But Abraham, welcome back to the microphones at Basic Gospel. We're so glad you're here with us today.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we're talking about our upcoming trip next February, February 7th through the 18th to Israel. It's an opportunity to come see where the story began. It's an opportunity to come see where his story became your story. It's also an opportunity to see the land of Jesus through the eyes of the new covenant are under today. So it's going to be unique, but one of the things that's going to make this trip unique is having Abraham guide us through the country. And Abraham, let's spend a few minutes and talk about some of the highlights of what people will see as they journey through the Holy Land. We're going to start on the Mediterranean coast. We're going to see a place called Caesarea by the Sea. What's fascinating about that place?
Look, Caesarea was a port built by Herod, this madman, this megalomaniac, this total paranoid, which financed his ego, The taxation of the trade going in and out, gave him the money to keep his population with jobs, even though they hated him and he hated them. They had money, food in their bellies. He managed to control them. And he went on a massive building spree. And that's why he's called Herod the Great. Caesarea was named after Augustus Caesar. And he had a palace for himself built above the sea with a swimming pool below it, which was the sea itself. Two racetracks, a theater, massage parlors, brothels, bathhouses, whatever you need for Roman culture and of overindulgence. What also was interesting is that the ruins have recently, well, not so recently, given up. You know, we make the ground open up its mouth and give us back our past. Even though people have said, oh, it's all fairy tales. The Bible, it's fairy tales. Nothing ever occurred. It's just been written recently. You guys are primitive if you believe in any of this stuff. Well, when you say carved in stone, well, they discovered in archaeological work a plaque, stone slab, about a meter high, half a meter wide, with the name of Pontius Pilate on it, commemorating the time that he was in power.
Yeah, wow.
Well, there we are, carved in stone. If that's not proof, take your Bible, throw it out the window.
But what we're seeing there actually proves that the Bible story was real. It's historical.
Absolutely.
It actually happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's also an interesting place because that's where Peter went from Jaffa up to Caesarea.
Yes.
And he met with Cornelius, a Roman centurion.
Yes.
And he gave the message about Christ, and they received the first Gentiles.
The first 1,000 Gentiles.
Yes. So that's when the door was opened up to the Gentile people, and this gospel really started to spread from that moment on. So it is a fascinating place, especially if you're a Gentile. It has meaning to you from that vantage point.
Quite.
But there's a beautiful amphitheater there that looks out onto the sea. We'll spend some time there.
Yes.
We'll look at an aqueduct,
yes,
which is quite fascinating. We will see the port in the water that they've found, and a racetrack, as you mentioned. It is just an incredible, incredible place. From there, we're going to go to Nazareth, and we all know about Nazareth. Jesus was raised there, but we're going to see a synagogue. And it's quite fascinating to see what a synagogue actually looks like. And, you know, Jesus entered a synagogue. He took Isaiah, the scroll, and he read Isaiah 61, I believe, and said, "Today this prophecy has been fulfilled in your hearing." And this would be much like the place where Jesus went to do that.
Yes. Look, 2,000 years ago, Nazareth was a little village, maybe 200 families, each with a little plot of land, a few trees, a few sheep, a few goats, maybe a couple of donkeys as well. And caves were an important part of where people lived as well. But there would have been a village, a small marketplace. There was certainly a well, a spring. And in the middle of the marketplace would have been the meeting house, the synagogue, which doubled up as a place for prayer, a place for study, probably even the village school and the town council, something like that. Stuck in the middle of today's marketplace, the only thing that has changed is what's being sold, because what was then sold was made in, you know, locally or imported food and clothing, etc., etc. Today, rather than coming from the more nearby locations, today it's coming from Taiwan and made in Hong Kong and, you know, things like that, and the United States as well. But the synagogue is still there in the middle of town.
And it really is a fascinating place to visit and to get kind of the feel of what worship would have been like. It's very simple. Nothing on the walls. It's just a place to really read the scriptures and to contemplate on what those scriptures mean.
Yes. As I said, they were. It was a small village. When you compare the synagogue in Nazareth to the synagogue in Capernaum, you could fit the Nazareth one at least 8 times into the Capernaum one. So it was a little village as compared to a much larger town on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. Its structure, its construction would have been, what's the word I'm looking for? Not as polished as the bigger synagogues, because they probably weren't as wealthy.
Yes. Well, and then from Nazareth, we will go on to the Sea of Galilee.
Yep.
We'll spend some time at Capernaum and see where Jesus kind of headquartered there and the significance of that. We'll also go to the Mount of Beatitudes. We're going to go see Magdala. Yeah, Magdala. They have uncovered that in recent years. And then we'll go up to Caesarea Philippi, which is a little bit north of the Sea of Galilee. And that's one of my favorite places. I think that is fascinating. What will we see there in Caesarea Philippi?
In Caesarea Philippi, the first thing that strikes you is that as you drive in your bus, right below you are major remains that have been uncovered. Major remains of a large, wealthy, debauched town.
And that's what it was.
That's exactly what it was. Roman. Built by Herod. Named after... It ends up being called Caesarea Philippi. Built by Herod. But when his son, Philip, inherited that part of the world, he added his name to the Caesarea to differentiate it from Caesarea on the Sea. Is that clear? And over there, there's a massive cave. There's a massive cave. Don't forget, it's over there that Jesus asks the disciples, "Who do people say I am, and who do you think I am?" And eventually Peter confesses that he recognizes Jesus as the Messiah, and Peter promises him the keys to the kingdom of heaven and says, "This is the rock on which I'm going to build my church." There is a massive, massive mountain face with a cave in it, and that cave had rather debauched sacrifices taking place in there when they were throwing in live whether it was animal or possibly even human sacrifices and different beliefs. If there was a sign of blood, then your sacrifice had been rejected. And if the sacrifice disappeared, then it had been accepted. And I believe that when Jesus said, that he talks about the gates of hell, I believe that it could well be those caves that he was talking about. Just imagine the hell of what was going on over there.
Yes, and that will not prevail against the building of the Church of Jesus Christ. So it's also where the Jordan begins.
That's one of the tributaries of the Jordan.
Yeah, so I think that's significant as well. But we'll see that. It's just an absolutely beautiful place. We will come and probably have a baptism ceremony in the Jordan River, and just probably a little bit south of the Sea of Galilee as it comes out of the Sea of Galilee.
That's the best place for the baptisms, just south where the water's just right.
Yeah, and then we'll actually take a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And if that sea could bear its testimony, Pastor, what a story it
would
tell.
And you know, that's the place.
Yep.
I mean, that is the place where Jesus walked the shores. He sees, you know, Peter and Andrew in the boat, and he says, come and follow me, and they get out and follow, and the same with James and John, and you know, we're going to be right there on those waters. We're going to take a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee, and then we'll venture south toward Jerusalem. Tell us a few things that we will see, you know, as we go from the Galilee to Jerusalem.
Well, if the usual itinerary, which is probably the best one, is followed, we would maybe going to Gideon Springs, where Gideon makes the final selection of the 300 from the 33,000 or whatever it was to defeat the Midianites. And then we'll probably also see the remains of what was one of the 10 towns in the Decapolis. And that was then known, at the time of Jesus, it was known as Scythopolis. And it's a Roman town. And you're going to see everything over there. Your eyes are going to pop out.
Yes.
It was covered up by a massive earthquake. They've uncovered it. And I have no doubt that Jesus and Mary and Joseph and the others making their way from Nazareth to and from Jerusalem would have gone that way, despite the fact that it was a Roman town, rather than venture through Samaria to get to Jerusalem.
Yes.
You're listening to a special edition of Basic Gospel. Our wonderful guest is a wonderful historian of the nation of Israel. His name is Abraham Hillel. He will serve as our tour guide on the upcoming tour that'll be February 7th through the 18th and this coming year. And Bob, we are really, really looking forward to that.
We are looking forward to it. And back to our itinerary, we're now heading toward Jerusalem. We're going to come up the backside of probably Mount Scopus. We're going to crest the hill. We're going to see the city for the first time, and that's just going to be an incredible experience. And then we're going to probably set up shop in Jerusalem for the next 5 days. Tell us some of the highlights of being in Jerusalem.
Firstly, you're returning, or you will be visiting, the eternal capital of the Jewish nation. Jerusalem is where Mount Moriah once stood, where Abraham would have taken Isaac for sacrifice. That is where Solomon eventually built the first temple. Of course, that sacrifice was never completed. Otherwise, history would be in a completely different place.
Right.
But you're going to be at a place that most people pray to, whether you're Jewish or Christian, during their prayers. There's old and there's modern Jerusalem. There's the old city of Jerusalem, which is basically, as far as Christianity and Judaism is concerned, is the center of their spiritual world.
And right in the center of that would be the Temple Mount, and just below that is the Western Wall that's shown in many photographs and videos and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
And we'll actually be there, right?
Exactly. The temple once stood on Mount Moriah, which is surrounded by three other mountains. That's where Solomon built the first temple. And Herod built a temple. I mean, it got destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, rebuilt by Ezra and Nehemiah, replaced later on. And when Herod comes to power, he rebuilds the temple. That's the temple associated where Jesus was taken for circumcision, where Jesus had his bar mitzvah, where Jesus went and taught, and when he learned, where he had friends, where he had detractors, where he gets involved in the moneylenders and chasing them out, and where he gets involved with discussions with the priesthood, etc., etc. And that's the temple he predicted would be destroyed stone from stone. And a lot of those destruction is today covered up by, again, the debris that was used to level out the ground so they could rebuild.
And we'll actually go through a tunnel, the Western Wall Tunnel, and
you
we'll see some of those stones.
You will indeed. Today, there are two mosques over there. There are two mosques over there, but the remnants are still there. And what is called the Western Wall was the outside of the garden fence that went round the Temple Plaza. Western Wall or Wailing Wall?
Yes. And we will see that. And then, you know, from there, we're going to take a little side trip down to Qumran and Gedi, Masada. That's quite a fascinating venture. Tell us a little bit about Qumran. Why is that an important place for us to go? What happened there?
Qumran is where in 1947, December the 29th, when the United Nations voted for the independence of the State of Israel. Yes.
Yes.
As a nation, a little Bedouin boy discovered the first seven jars that contained what became known as the Dead Sea Scrolls. So the significance of that
yes.
cannot be overstated. Yeah. That's number one. En Gedi is a beautiful nature reserve out in the middle of the desert. Lovely, beautiful, fresh water. En Gedi is mentioned in the story when David is running away from Saul and he's hiding in the caves. Saul goes in there to rest and relieve himself, and David cuts off a piece of his garment. Saul was a little bit of a schizophrenic, perhaps, and one minute he loves David, the next minute he's throwing a spear at him. But anyway, that's another story. And then when we get to Masada, over there, we'll see the site of the Jews' last stand against the Romans before we finally, the last defenders over there eventually committed mutual suicide. And that was the last stand of Jews in their ancestral homeland. But we have returned right back there to where we once were. And then you get to swim in the Dead Sea.
That's right. And that's a fascinating thing as well.
Sorry.
My dad, you know, never could swim and had always wanted to float. And we get to the Dead Sea, and first time in his life, he floated. He was the happiest guy that day. It was that was a wonderful, wonderful sight to see. Then we'll come back to Jerusalem.
Yes.
You know, our final day in Jerusalem, we're going to retrace the final steps of Jesus. Starting at the Mount of Olives, we'll eventually wind up at an empty tomb, Gordon's Calvary, and that's something that was uncovered when the British came through. General Gordon discovered this place, and it's quite fascinating, isn't it?
Yes, Pastor Bob. Firstly, let me just add a little bit, which I say to most people. It's that it happened rather than where it happened, which has to be of importance, because there are some locations that have got two or three sites for the same thing.
Yes.
Yes. As far as the place where Jesus was crucified, entombed and resurrected, there is the Holy Sepulchre, which is for the more Orthodox, the Catholics, the Greek Orthodox, Armenians, Copts, etc., etc. And as far as the rest of Christianity, it is the garden tomb, or what you call the Gordon's Calvary.
Yes.
One is a wonderfully chaotic place, and the other one is a place for prayer and spirituality and meditation.
Right. Right. Well, it is just a wonderful story. I actually write about that in my book, Simple Gospel, Simply Grace, a day that Gina and I, just the two of us, got to retrace the steps, and one of the most spiritually moving days that I've ever had in my life, as you really see that, you know, Jesus is not in that tomb. The tomb is empty, and there's something significant about the resurrection. As a matter of fact, all of Christianity hinges on that one event. If Christ had not been raised, as Paul wrote, we're still in our sins, we're without hope, our faith is futile. So this is a significant spot on planet Earth, and we'll get to visit that and just sit and meditate over the fact, the good news that Jesus Christ is alive. Abraham, I know you've been doing this for 33 years. You've had the privilege of introducing people to the Holy Land, of taking them to sites, of telling the story. And I know in your heart and mind, and you see that there's something, you know, beyond just human choosing that happens in this. There's something actually supernatural, isn't there?
You put your finger right on it. Through the years, having had several thousand pilgrims travel with me, and having watched how they arrive wide-eyed, excited, and then I see a transformation. What I am convinced about is that these people that do make the decision to come are not deciding for themselves. It's not what any of us, what you are doing, what this radio program is doing, what I am doing. They don't choose to come. They are chosen to come by a power that I do not understand. I can see it. I can feel it. I cannot explain it. They get chosen. They do not choose.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at that. And I do, you know, going to Israel is an investment. It is an investment of time, an investment of money. It's looking at the risks and saying, is this going to be safe, and all of these sort of things. And yet people are doing that all the time. Tourism is on the rise. Pilgrims are traveling to Israel in record numbers. You have said that there is an ingathering of the Jewish people. More and more people are moving to Israel and making that their home. So we're seeing prophetic events fulfilled. And I think when you get caught up in that, it's just like, I've got to go. I have to go. I'm just being compelled to make that decision and to journey to Israel. And that's exciting. I mean, to be able to think that I'm seeing prophetic words in the Bible, in the Old Testament, and in the New, being fulfilled right before my very eyes.
Absolutely. Over the last few years, and I don't get involved in politics very often, but because of the political situation, specifically in the more modern countries, in Europe, and maybe even the United States so much, Jewish people have begun to feel that they are being targeted specifically. And that has developed a movement for Jewish people to start returning. It is an ingathering of the people. God has worked it in a strange way, but it's the ingathering of the people to their ancestral homeland. And that is the precedent to, of course, the advent of Messiah.
Yeah. That is exciting. Abraham Hillel, thank you so much for being with us. It's a fascinating conversation, and friends, we hope that you've enjoyed it as much as Bob and I have. We will be going to the Holy Land February 7th through the 18th. All the information is available online at basicgospel.net. Simply click the events menu. All the information is there, an opportunity to register online. If you'd like to talk with someone, you can speak with Billy, our operator, during Central Time office hours. Her number, 844-412-2742, 844-412-2742. Abraham, God's blessings to you. Thank you for being with us. Now for Abraham, for Bob Christopher, Richard Piper, and the ministry team, Bob Davis saying God bless you. We'll be back for another live edition tomorrow. See you then. Bye-bye.